Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You know what I want.
Not Samson, Greg. Not Samson.
No, I want a top Samson.
Hey, that's pretty bad. 125-103. The Raptors lose to the Miami Heat. It wasn't a close game. It's largely the heroics of RJ Barrett that kept, you know, a semblance of respectability. Emmanuel started out the game pretty well, honestly, in this one. But and Bruce Brown, we even get him like splitting pick and rolls and stuff, but it was the hard charging driving game of RJ Barrett to the tune of 35 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists that kept the Raptors from being like 30 pieced. And you know how I'm feeling? You know the title of the podcast is like one step closer to the end. Even when you play the Heat, it's a little bit emo. Even when you lose by 22. Look, like that's Jimmy right there. They got the emo haircut in there too, man. These Raptors, you know, they're pretty healthy, all things considered, in this game. They just got wiped. The Heat do a very, very good job of moving the ball, making progressive reads, pump, dribble, make the read, find the seam. They do a really good job. They cut against it. They have lots of guys who are comfortable in the middle of the defense. So, like, if a guy's comfortable in the middle of the defense, it means that rotations to the middle and away from the middle are way more important to time up as the defense, because that guy is not going to be exiting the middle of the floor. A lot of guys, this was something Fred VanVleet had to work on for a really long time, is like getting middle, staying middle, being comfortable middle, so that you don't just get middle and leave middle, so that teams can funnel you out. The Heat and, you know, like, man, Jimmy in particular, he only had 14 points, but he had 7 assists, and he was kind of, he got his way in the middle of the floor. Bam Adebayo pretty comfortable in the middle. Tyler Hero pretty comfortable in the middle. And Jamie Hawkins, very, very strong in the middle, especially considering he's a rookie, right? So the Raptors, they were completely undone by that. Very comfy in the middle. The rotations were not on point. It means that they try and recover out somewhere. Maybe Jimmy or Hawkins stay middle. And then there's a playmaking opportunity to go to the rim. That's how you get Adebayo. Because like Hawkins had 9 assists tonight. Jimmy had 7. Hawkins was a plus 26, for God's sakes. Kevin Love had, what, 14-8 in this game. DeLon Wright, a quick 7-5. And Bam Adebayo shoots 80% from the floor, right? Haywood Highsmith, 80% from the floor. These guys got to work off of the other guys. And here we are. Here we are. The Raptors, another loss. That's the reason why they lost, is because the Heat are so damn good in the middle of the floor. And also, we're talking about a Raptors team that is up against it. But honestly, the roster tonight, RJ, Grady, Kelly, Gary, Emmanuel, as far as starting fives go that we've seen from this Raptors team, that's better than a lot of what we've seen. The Heat weren't playing like the slouch version of these Raptors, let's say. Ochai gives you almost 26 minutes off the bench. Bruce played a strong game. The defense wasn't good, I'll say that much, but he played a strong game. Nothing very notable from like Jordan Wara, Garrett Temple, Javon, Malik, nothing there. Ochai, quiet game. They lost his minutes like crazy. The Heat were able to help off of him. But, you know, them's the breaks. RJ Barrett, driving, out of handoffs, out of side pick and roll actions, in transition, motoring his way to the bucket for 35 points on 72% shooting. He was really, really impressive. Giovanni says, Samson, I think I kind of saw Gary Trent and Grady Dick when they actually face a team that guards. They don't do so well. I think there's a huge difference between Grady's game and Gary's game tonight, just from the start. Not to mention that Gary is, what, like 25, Grady is 20. And on top of that, like, Gary's asked to do more Grady, kind of, especially with RJ and Emmanuel back in the swing of things. Gary taking 13 shots, Emmanuel 11, RJ taking 18, not to mention going to the line for five used possessions there. Grady kind of got to get into the background. And as far as, like, being comparable about, like, actually facing a team that guards, I thought Grady was fine. He has different expectations than Gary. I thought Gary had a really tough game. And that was Gary because the Heat actually did, like, a fantastic job. As you mentioned, guarding, they played a lot of hard hedge. And the Raptors, they have one guy who can beat a hard hedge. And that guy beat the hard hedge all night. RJ Barrett, that guy's a train. He is a truck running towards the rim. You try and hard hedge, you get out wide. You try and set the edge there, he's going to come across your shoulder. He's going to make you a turnstile, and he's turning the corner. Hard hedge is not exactly ideal against RJ. He's patient. He will stop his drive and restart it. He's very, very deliberate in getting to the rim. And so he obviously found his way to the bucket against the Heat, and that was great. But Grady against a hard hedge is not going anywhere. Gary against a hard hedge is not really going anywhere. They're going to force a pickup dribble, or they're going to make him take such a wide angle to the rim that he's going to get stuck in no man's land. And Manuel quickly against a hard hedge usually is going to use an escape dribble, pick up the dribble, and reverse the ball. So the Heat, they kept them at bay quite a bit. And that's why you see, like, quickly in this game, like, 15-5, Gary 7-1, and 7 points on 13 shots. That's tough. The Heat played good defense, and especially for this version of the Raptors. Now, the hard hedge on Scottie Barnes is something I'd really like to see Scottie when he's healthy, because Scottie is going to take that hard hedge. He's going to get into a bully drive. He's going to keep the hedge man on his hip, and whoever set the screen, get middle. And Scottie can make that read back to you as you cut middle. And if they have to tag, then somebody will shake up or lift up on the opposite side, and Scottie will create a three-point shot. Like, the hard hedge is Scottie can kind of make hay in the sunshine when that happens. But the current roster, it's not really there, you know? It's what the Raptors, whether it was a switch or whether it was a hard hedge, what they really used to do a lot of is, like, use the screener to seal the man on the back end of it, start cutting middle. It's just like, you know, Gary is not going to be able to make that cut, that pass to the middle cutter. Grady, maybe not as much, although Grady and Kelly ran a pick and roll in this game where they just switched across the top, the Heat did. And then that means that Kelly obviously has a mismatch on him. He takes him deep. Grady makes a really fantastic post entry pass. He doesn't wait for Kelly to get to the post so that he can pass it and the Heat can time that up to double on the catch. No, as Kelly's going down towards the post, Grady makes a proactive pass to lead him to the spot so that the Heat have to double after the catch. The Heat double after the catch was a little bit sloppier. RJ makes a cut right down the middle. Kelly finds him. You get a dunk. Like, that kind of stuff is really nice. Although, that's not every possession. And the Raptors really did struggle to score in this game. And it was fully credit to the Heat, I think, playing really good defense. And, you know, we're kind of going over that again. But I like some of Grady's playmaking in this game. I know he has 0 assists, but as far as, like, spraying the ball across the court, nice. Good to see. A couple shots I really like that he made. And I still like that he's able to get open out of triple threat stuff because of the live ball action, you know, or the live dribble stuff is still obviously a far away development for him at this point in time. He was playing. They have him listed as the power forward tonight. I don't think that's accurate at all, but kind of funny. Kelly plays 25 minutes. Phoenix Plays E says, it's official. Memphis can't catch us for 6th. We are locked into the top 6. I will have the statistics for the likelihood of moving up, I guess, right away. And Giovanni said, Samson, did you see the 3-way tie now with Orlando, Pacers, and 76ers? Even with the Heat, if the Heat win last game and Pacers lose, Heat own the tiebreaker, so they finish with a better standing. Yeah, the Heat can finish as high as 5th, and the Pacers are currently 5th in the East. So that means that the Raptors pick that they get from the Pacers would be the 18th overall pick. They are tied in record with both the Magic and the 76ers, but they own the tiebreakers against both the Magic and the 76ers, meaning that 5, 6, 7 are all tied in record but the Pacers currently sit at the top of it. They control their own destiny, and they can just win against the Hawks and stay as high as fifth. I don't think they can get to fourth. They can stay as high as fifth, or the Pacers can fall all the way to seventh, I believe. I guess I don't know if they can fall to eighth right now. I mean, they probably can. So as far as the top six stuff, because we basically talked about the game to this point and how the Raptors succeeded against certain things, against those coverages, and how the Heat also succeeded. Coco says all the probability math around this time of year makes my head spin. It is a lot, yeah. Okay, so I have a crib sheet from Josh Lewinberg. I'm reading his tweet on it because he did, you know, the great job of collecting all this. So thank you, Josh. Quote, the Raptors are about to be, so this was in the past, quote, the Raptors are about to be locked in the sixth worst record. They'll have a 45.8% chance of keeping their pick, 37.2% chance of moving into the top four, and 9% shot at landing the first pick. If it falls out of the top six, which is a 54.2% chance, the pick will go to San Antonio via the Jakob Poeltl trade. A few reminders. The NBA only draws for the top four, so the Raptors will lose the pick if even one team slotted 7 through 14 moves up, something that has happened in 4 or 5 years since the league adopted this lottery format in 2019. The team with the sixth best odds has yet to move up under the new format. So, teams with the seventh or worst lottery odds to move into the top four in 2023, nobody did. In 2022, Sacramento went from 7th to 4th for Keegan Murray. In 2021, Toronto went from 7th to 4th for Scotty Barnes. Yay! Incredible pick. 2020, Charlotte went from 9th to 3rd for LaMelo Ball. Chicago went from 7th to 4th for Patrick Williams. In 2019, New Orleans went from 7th to 1st for Zion. Memphis went from 8th to 2nd for Ja. And the Lakers went from 11th to 4th with DeAndre Hunter, who eventually became an Atlanta Hawk. Okay, that's where we're at. Somebody made a joke, I can't remember who, but they said it would be funny if the Raptors ended up getting like another undesirable first overall pick, which is a reference obviously to Andrea Bargnani and the fact that that didn't exactly work out perfectly, but the Raptors did have a first overall pick. They did win the first overall pick the 1 year, I think the first year of their existence, yes or no, but they weren't technically allowed to win it because they were an expansion team. So they forfeited it or redrew, if I'm remembering. Andre Osipov says, I think that's how gamblers lose a lot of money. Well, I'll tell you how gamblers lose a lot of money. Here's what it is. Nothing is statistically in your favor at all. And gambling, in studies, what they've discovered is that people who have gambling addictions, they're not actually addicted to gambling or to winning. They're not addicted to lose. It's the participation in gambling. So win or lose, you're going to want to keep gambling. Like the effect on your mind is not so much that like, oh, if I win, I'll keep gambling. And if I lose, it negatively affects me and I stop. No. Participating in gambling, which statistically is going to, you know, part you from your money, is what happens. And you get addicted to that feeling, the rush of just gambling, putting money out there. Bad news. Phoenix Plays E says it's a dopamine rush. Certainly. It's tough out there, everybody. Yeah. So, okay, we have a little bit more from Josh just around the pick. So, if the Spurs don't get Toronto's pick this season, it rolls over to 2025 with the same top six protection. And then again to 2026, if it still hasn't conveyed, it would become 2 second rounders in 2027. Okay. Draft lottery is May 12th. I'll probably do a podcast, honestly. We'll all watch it together. I don't know. The Raptors' odds break down as follows. 9% for first pick, 9.2% for second, 9.4% for third, 9.6% for fourth, fifth, not available, I guess, sixth, 8.6%, 7 to 10, 54.2%, and 11th to 14th, not available. Okay, interesting. Well, I don't know what's going to happen with it, but we're, the game is afoot. That's kind of where we're at. The Raptors, though, not a fun game. Like the draft lottery, I remember when they jumped to four. That was fun. That was very, very interesting. Coco asks, so it's still more likely we don't get to keep it? Yes. 54.2% that you don't keep it. Phoenix Plays E says, all this suffering for what? Well, I guess the suffering would be, or like a chance that I don't. But also, I think like Scottie's healthy next year. I have a really tough time seeing the Raptors bad enough to be like in consideration for Cooper Flagg or something like that, which is, I know people want it to roll over. They're like, this would be nice. Like, let's just get rid of the pick this draft. Like, maybe they don't like Ron Holland or Buzelis or, you know, maybe Klingon, all these types. Who knows? But it would be particularly disappointing for the Raptors to, you know, have the season that they did and not have the pick for the devastating aspect of that season. Now, they still would have a really early second, which is extremely valuable given cap considerations. I know the cap perverts really like the first overall pick in the second round. The cap perverts love that one. And I understand why. They will have probably the 17th or 18th pick from the Pacers, although the Pacers could fall out, could have a disastrous play-in tournament, and the Raptors could have a second pick or still have a pick in the lottery. That would be a pretty gnarly situation, you know? Andre Osipov says, we lose the pick, I'm instantly on the this is the weakest draft of all time bandwagon. Yeah, that would be kind of fun. That's the discourse that follows for sure. Is like, we didn't even want it. Who wants a pick at the top of this draft? What? And then, ooh, we'd probably get like, you know, this is not how I feel, but there, I guarantee we get like one take where there's a guy. I don't know the guy's name, but there's a guy out there who's ready and willing to say that a draft this bad and the fact that like, players picked at the top of the draft have like set cap holds that they have to sign for. It's actually a bad idea. It's bad to get a high pick because you'll pay them too much when you can get a high pick in next year's. Like, I expect a variation of that take. I don't think it's true. I don't agree with it, but I expect a variation of that take. If any of the listeners see a variation of that take or that take explicitly, please DM it to me on Twitter. My DMs are open. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at. It's been a season, man. It's been a real season, hasn't it? You know, tough game for the Raptors. At least we got some fun plays in it, but honestly, just not. They don't have the juice for this matchup, and the Heat. The Heat are pretty professional. They've been okay lately. You know, they got Jimmy for one of his, I know he's missed time and he sometimes is like, could not give a shit about what's happening in the games. But they got one of the Jimmy games. He didn't take very many shots, but he helped control the game. So did Hawkes. You know, it's kind of what it is. Slomo says, how many of the so-called experts calling this a weak draft have actually watched the top players who, oh my, are a bunch of internationals? I can't means test scouts or anybody else, but a lot of people who do watch international basketball, the Raptors draft international players or guys who have international roots. Maybe it's not quite right to say that they draft international players in that sense, because like even Pascal is New Mexico State, even Coloco was Arizona, OG is Indiana. Like, maybe that's not really correct, but I've seen so many people from across the spectrum of drafts say that this is a weak draft. Now, that doesn't, like, there could be some aspect of it where guys just aren't watching enough international ball. That could be true, but I don't know. Bilal went seventh last year, right? Wemby went one. International, like, guys definitely scout international. And maybe international guys still fall a little bit, but international guys definitely get scouted. And I've seen, like, there's guys who, like, live overseas who have called it, you know, weaker, who spend a lot of time scouting international because the game has grown that way. But I agree with the sentiment that, like, it might be a bit presumptuous to call a draft so weak all the time. Like, looking back, there's one draft that I really don't like. 2013 is a tough draft. Like, in that first round, there's, like, maybe five or six positive players. That's a really, really tough draft. Of course, Giannis is in that draft, and that's meaningful. You know, Victor Oladipo, if he didn't have such terrible injury luck, I think would have been All-NBA, you know, a few times rather than just the once. But that's a really tough draft. Other drafts, I see lots of guys I really like. 2020, I really like that draft. There's a bunch of guys I really like, you know. Even a guy like Maxey who fell, Devin Vassell, who I think is a lot better than his draft slot was, you know. Phoenix Plays East says people were calling the 17 draft mid before the 17-18 season. I guess that's what, that's Fultz, Tatum, Lonzo, De'Aaron Fox, OG is in that one, Kuzma. That's a good draft, I think, just off the top of my head. But I agree with that, Slomo, though. It is a little bit presumptuous to just say a draft is bad. But I'm saying that, having done significantly less legwork than so many other people. We have an opposing or a point of view that is like adjacent to it. But Nesta says, next year's draft is also being overhyped a bit, in my opinion. Each year there are going to be guys who don't pan out, but there are also guys who have long careers. Yeah, it's next year's like drafts, once they get a bit of steam, they can really, really get going. Because I like the 2021 draft. I do. I like a lot of players that have come out of it so far. But is that like the definitive draft of its decade? Like it was kind of said to be? Like Scottie's fantastic. I know Mobley gets a lot of shit, but I like Mobley still a lot. I really, really like Franz Wagner too. There's like quite a few players that I enjoy a lot in that draft. And I still like Jalen Green. I still like Jalen Green. But yeah, it's definitely tough to predict how a draft of 60 like damn near minors. They're not minors, but they're young men. Some of them were just recently minors. It's tough for them to just say like these guys are bad. This is not a good draft. And I understand they do so much work and legwork around it. And even Masai, when he was up at the press conference, he said like the draft wasn't good. And he said he didn't want to have all of the picks in this draft. And so he traded one. Like he held his hand out. Like he showed his cards. He was like, look, public, these are my cards. This is what I plan to do with it. And then Kelly Olynyk and Ochai Agbaji basically come back for like a what would have ended up being the 29th or 30th first round pick. 30th pick, I should say. You know, it's something to consider. YG7 says we need to leave this draft with a guard, a wing, and a big, ideally. Well, if you have three picks, I would like maybe two guards, maybe. I like guards a lot, but maybe there wouldn't be enough possessions. A guard, a wing, and a big. I would not go into it with that idea, although if it shakes out that they like a guard, a wing, and a big, and those are the guys they like, great. But like, if you pick two bigs, whatever, if you pick two wings, whatever, a guard, I don't think the Raptors should be married to that many players on this team currently. And that doesn't, like, that's just how it shakes out. Goku says, I also like guards. Guards are great. There's a reason they people identify with guards so much, because they're very aspirational. You know, they're small out there. They're not small in reality. You meet a guard, you're like, oh, you're a big person. You meet TJ McConnell, he'd be a big guy, but he's just really small on the court. All this kind of stuff. You know, it's, guards are really cool. I love guards. Oh, man. It's tough. Scott Lilly says we need size. It doesn't matter what positions. Give me a big guard, a big wing. I like size too. I think that size is really important. It helps paper over a lot of like shortcomings and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Slomo says Topic, Dillingham, Missy, and Darren Holmes. I think we talked about three of those guys on the draft podcast, and all of them were pretty well liked. And yeah, Missy, and Nesta has three more names: Castle, Chomchey, and AJ Mitchell. Yeah. More draft stuff to come, but we have to get through the last game of the season, and then we have to get to exit interviews, which I presume will be Monday. And then I don't know if we'll get to talk to Masai that day. I'm not sure how exactly that's going to shake out. Definitely the players. We'll see, though. We will see. Ian says guards and bigs are floor raisers. Wings are ceiling raisers, in my opinion. Yeah. I think everybody has the capability to, like, what would you call it? Not a quadrant. What is it when it's three? I'm not sure. Guards can be ceiling or floor raising. Bigs can be ceiling or floor raising. Wings can be ceiling or floor raising. You know, I guess we'll see. Nesta says, who reps the raps for the lottery this year? I answered this a couple podcasts ago, but I think it'll be Scotty for some reason. I don't know why. And Andre says, I like Kalel Ware, but his motor is being questioned. After somebody said Kalel Ware is like Miles Turner in this draft. I was double screening because obviously the Pacers game has a lot of implications for the Raptors pick. So I was double screening. Miles, man, and I've watched more Pacers stuff lately because of the work I'm going to do with Caitlin Cooper over on her Patreon for the playoff stuff or play-in stuff, however far the Pacers end up making it. You know, Miles has been such a step slower defensively. Like, he really is a much different defender than he used to be. And I learned this from Caitlin, firstly, or maybe I shouldn't quote her in that way, but just kind of like talking about how he impacts the defense and where it's been. Miles is not as affecting a defender as I think his reputation might suggest. You know, it's he does not hold down the center position like that defensively. I think that he's been really unique offensively. I think his driving game is really quite unique for a big with his size. And of course he can shoot it a bit, you know, but, you know, as Andre says, you know, you expected more from Indiana. So did I, but you know, Haliburton shooting like 29% from three since his injury, whereas like the first 30 games of the season, I think he was like 43% on 9 3-point attempts a game, just like massive volume, massive efficiency. And his driving game has been affected. He's been even worse on defense. Like, and Pascal, the transition over there hasn't been as clean on either side of the floor, I think. And also, I think they still have to figure out like how they cut up the pie of the offense, because sometimes they just get stuck above the break and they can be a little bit passive. And it's just like, you know, they didn't hit the ground running, and they didn't have the health to hit the ground running, but they didn't hit the ground running. You know, YG7 says we have a 2026 first from Indy as well. Who knows where that lands? Yeah. Who knows? I guess we'll see. But yeah, the Raptors, no more, well, soon we'll be done worrying about all that kind of stuff, or the regular season stuff, and we can start worrying about, I guess, the larger implications of team building, drafting, all that kind of stuff is tough, you know? We'll get to talk about all the hypotheticals, but yeah, 30 minutes feels like that's where I'm at with this podcast. The Raptors, they come into another game, they get beat pretty badly. They're overmatched. RJ Barrett scores. Yeah. Nesta says, can we expect the Raptors show with Samson Folk next season? Absolutely not. They wouldn't name it after me, to be quite certain about that. As far as like me doing other stuff, Will just today asked the question, right? Or not asked the question. Will announced it today. And really well done by him. I think that the Raptors show is like it became an institution very quickly. There's a reason they put it on TV shortly after Will started it and Alex being there. And, you know, it was so popular and it really resonated with fans. So I think, like, just a huge credit, whatever Will and Alex end up doing, which I suspect will be independent and wildly popular and, like, a little bit more, you know, cutting edge than the Raptors show ended up being, just being like under the Rogers framework or whatever it is. Right. Actually, I don't want to say that, but I just expect it'll be good. So big shout out to Will for the show and all that kind of stuff. And big shout out to him for having me on to co-host with him when Blake was gone. And then what happens with the show in the future? I don't know. I would tell you guys if I was tapped for like next up, but I don't know about all that. We'll see what happens. Yeah, that's where it's at. That's 30 minutes. That's the podcast. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's been an absolute blast, of course. I hope you keep tuning in to the podcast to come. Some of them live, some of them just releasing normally. Keep listening, keep enjoying. Thank you very much. Like the video before you get out of here. Help spread the podcast around for people who might want to enjoy it and learn a little bit more than they might get from other people. You know, they might learn about the hard hedge and how it's particularly difficult for the Raptors. Let's cross our fingers. Yeah, and subscribe if you feel so inclined. And yeah, that's a podcast. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye.